You are listening to The Dystopian Republic, and I, Raul Guerrero, am your host. We begin today's story on the evening of February 13th, 1976. A production crew had congregated in the presidential office of Bromelia's Capitol building filming Grimsby Sr. as he was firmly seated by his desk and made an austere face. When the cameras rolled, Grimsby Sr. told the Bromelian people that their forces and those from Robopel were in the process of encircling the Ottoloon Islands. He said the time has come for the Ottolunians to pay for their wanton attack on New Year's Eve. Grimsby asserted that the island chain should have never been granted independence, citing the bombings and harboring of Alexis Jr. as reasons why. His promise to his Bromelians was the same one Feodora made to her Robopelis, being that this war will truly be the end of the line for Alexis and the Bromelian People's Colony. As the sun began to rise on February 14th, a port that was more harbor than city sat on a coastal valley that's dozens of feet above sea level. The slopes beyond it were sheer and led straight to the ocean, and from above, it took up the entirety of an island that had an extinct volcano at its rear. Sitting in a cargo ship's crew cabin, Okosua breathed in all the quiet she could get while bracing herself for the coming fascist typhoon. She took out of her front pocket a locket that had a wholesome picture of herself with her mother, father, and twin baby brothers. Okosua missed the days she and her family spent exploring Nefuala's islands, dancing with glee whenever warm rain would fall. Until the Bromelians came in 1963, her life stuffed itself on soccer, dance, and partying as if they were its major food groups, thinking back to when she'd stay up for days at a time due to her mind not knowing when to rest. Okosua was especially interested in insect behavior, planning to enroll in the University of the Capital so that her dream of being an entomologist could come true. While she did achieve that goal, it wasn't in the way she fought, and for the forces about to arrive, her success would aid the Ottoloon Islands in its defense of Yevonport. Okosua was grateful for the education Alexis provided her, but still viewed him as a sick, rotting, nasty nonce. Wooden boxes were evenly scattered throughout the tiny port city, sitting like potato bulks waiting to be taken by customers. Okosua begged her late family to forgive her for what she's about to unleash on a scale never seen, calling it an entity only few could understand, but one the Bromelians and Robopelis will soon feel the wrath of. She hoped the boxes will suffice in canceling out whatever surprises the enemy may have, but was eager to fight alongside the Nefualis. Radar watchers at Alexis's base kept their eyes peeled for Bromelian and Robopelis forces, spotting a convoy quickly approaching Yevonport from the southwest. What they couldn't see was the woman leading one of the nearing warships, and she was Adelina, sitting with a few of her countless followers. The convoy she was in began seeing Yevonport in the distance, darkening the air in the involved ships with a vengeance that dimmed their occupants. Sirens sounding throughout the city. Okosua and her friends in arms assumed defensive positions indoors to prevent themselves from being casualties of their own surprise. Adelino Sr.'s death hoisted Adelina's popularity to a height even she didn't believe was possible, but that brought her to terms with said demise. Her father had always intended her to be the heiress to a seat of power, for he believed that she'd continue his mission to protect Robopel from the savagery that almost undid him more than once. Now that Adelino was killed by the very kind he was at odds with his whole life, Adelina made doing away with his killers an errand of her existence. She volunteered to take part in the attack on Yvonneport because she knew Okosua would be there, the woman who dealt her father the punch that shattered his skull, killing him in seconds. Adelina remembered how shocked some of her followers were that Haruna and Chizoba were on decent terms again, but she wasn't. She knew those two men shared a hatred of Bromelia and its people would inevitably come crying to Alexis for shelter, and that their cries would grow fruits with strings attached. Adelina called Haruna and Chizoba's yells for Robopelese and Nefualese liberation bull-ass that only the feral and rabid will eat up. She smiled at how ready the young people in her warship were to avenge her father, even if it meant being the ones having their lives laid down. Adelina liked that and was intent on making the followers with her useful in one way or another, telling Okosua and her Adelunian excrements that the Robopelese have a secret weapon with them. Yvonneport went from being a busy little port to an urbanized fortress quicker than a room light switching on, as if that switch had been rehearsed for months. If there was one thing Adelina and Okosua could agree on, it would be the well they wished for their respective loved ones elsewhere in the Adelune Islands. The Robopelese convoy slowed to a stop 3 miles southwest of Yvonneport, releasing 20 small boats that jetted toward the city like missiles homing in on targets. Adelina was ready to bleed out some Adelunians when she saw the boxes sprinkled around, telling her fellow invaders to stop 100 feet shy of touching the island. Okosua was baffled by that abrupt halt, assumed that the Robopelese got cold feet at the last second, and said the boxes may not be necessary after all. Adelina wasn't fooled by the uncomplicated arrival, because Kiana told her every detail of what she'd learned at the Nefuala Institute of Biotechnology in Burr Crahe City. She'd be damned if the Robopelese fleet ran into their demises like sheep running to their slaughters, calling that a humiliation she feared most of all. Okosua and her Adelunian comrades grew annoyed that their enemies were just sitting at sea like buoys, struggling to resist the urge to come out and engage with all their might. Adelina informed Feodora of the surprise spread throughout Yvonneport, rolling the eyes of Robopel's ruler like it was nothing new, but no less irritating. Okosua looked back at the volcano behind the city as if it was a weapon waiting to be activated, smiling at how sweet it'll be to watch the Robopelles squirm, squeal, and simmer. Adelina knew what the Adelunians were planning, hoped that the convoy leaders did too, but had a plan B should that plan take her superiors by surprise. The ship she led brought up the rear from afar as the others charged at the island as if caution was thrown to the wind, prompting Okosua to order that the volcano be extinct no more. Adelina knew the charge her comrades carried out was a mistake and could only pray that they realize this in time to correct it. Shining into the volcano, the sun revealed a machine holding its former anatomy from crater to reservoir, shooting out a smoke how magma would during an eruption. Okosua's heart happily raced as she told the Robopelles that it's time for them to go away for good, telling them goodbye and good riddance. From inside her ship, Adelina saw the smoke shoot out of the volcano, soar to the sky, and expand itself into a mushroom cloud. Her heart sank to the ocean floor when the smell of ammonia reached her sinuses, watching it go down as she predicted. The cloud spilled down like water boiling over a pot, fogging over Yavanport and making the boxes buzz, tremble, crack, swell, and burst out mantis-like paper wasps that were out for blood. Okosua and her comrades sheltered in bunkers under the buildings they hid in, laughing harder the angrier the mass buzz became. The convoy's charge at Yavanport made their engines rev loudly, enraging the wasps into focusing their swarm on them. 2 to 12 feet from the island, it jointly stuck out, pen-like muzzles like tongues in human mouths. Adelina knew the wasps had the fangs and stingers to pierce their way into the ships and will sting and bite until their targets cease living. Her worry vanished when the convoy jointly sprayed a cloudy mist that did away with what little visibility remained. Adelina was honest in her disbelief that her comrades would have her knowledge, but was glad to have been wrong that one time, scolding the Adelunians for daring to insult her people. As the wasps kept on buzzing, Okosua imagined Adelina and the Robopelles being stung from head to toe and collapsing to their convulsing deaths from the venom. She fought back to when she crossbred praying mantises and great black wasps into aphid killers. Okosua cherished the nights she spent having her workers throw disappeared right-wing Adelunians into bubbles full of her modified wasps. The results of those tests made her believe that the Robopelles will suffer and die as horribly as her former subjects did. The aphid killers powered through the insecticide to reach the convoy, wasting no time biting and stinging at its ships. Watching and listening on in horror, Adelina couldn't believe that the spray didn't work, ordering her comrades to get suited and masked. The aphid killers bit and stung countless penholes on the ship's sheet metal, continuing to do so until the openings were large enough for them to fly through. They swarmed in like a tsunami wave, slamming the shore and pushing far inland, reaching Robopelles' troops in seconds, but their attack was futile. Laughing in her full bodysuit, Adelina told the Adelunians that the Robopelles won't fall that easily, but they most certainly will. The aphid killers' stinging and biting frenzy lasted 3 minutes, ending in them dying while still trying to attack until death fully set in. With the Wasps eliminated, Adelina and her comrades had to abandon their convoy as the damage it sustained was terminal. Due to the ships sinking quickly, the Robopelis saw the sea as their only escape, causing some to drown from being unable to swim while wearing the suits that just saved them. Adelina looked back at her drowning comrades and swam on as if they were little more than toys that broke or cars that roared their last rev. Swimming with no trouble, she was jubilated to see nearly everyone else follow, setting her sights on Yvonport without worry of a shot being fired into the ocean. Adelina and her comrades rose out of the water and held the slope like their lives depended on it, waiting for the Adelunians to come out. They couldn't see more than a few inches in any direction because of the cloud mix still enveloping Yvonport, but they weren't bothered by that. After a while of hearing only wind and ocean, Adelina and her comrades started hearing human activity from above. Most Adelunian soldiers rushed outside, while Akosua was among the few who opted to stay locked in the bunkers for a little while longer. They expected to look down at a floating, bloody mass grave of dead aphid killers and Robopelis, but their rush for the cliffs only progressed mere feet before it slammed its kiss of the ground. The soldiers vomited as if their brains and guts had come out, baffling them as they took pills meant to prevent the ammonia from affecting them. Akosua couldn't grasp why her comrades were falling ill so violently, peeking out of her bunker to see what was going on, and being bashed by a smell that made her shriek like a kindergartner. Her grip on the ladder leading in and out of the bunker was lost, sending her 30 feet down and almost splatting her on the floor 7 meters further below. Akosua saved herself by frantically gripping the step and swinging her body until there was no chance of her falling again, looking down at how close she was from dying. 7 inches from the floor, she jumped onto it to dwell on the nausea she acquired from her brief but deep-breathed exposure to the cloud mix. Akosua vomited everywhere and gagged at a volume high enough to make others think she was dying of malnutrition. She was given a syrup that sweetened away her stomach's want to push out, making it possible for her to start regaining the fluids she just lost. Akosua felt so sick that sipping out of a canteen of water was a strenuous effort, but she ultimately got herself to gulp it down in about a half hour. Her bunker mates tried getting her to describe to them what she smelled, but her focus was on waiting for the smell's effects to sufficiently recede. When that point came an hour later, Okosua said the fog contained ammonia and sodium hypochlorite, horrifying everyone around her. But what confused her was why the toxic cloud's effects on her were so acute and severe, recalling that while it was poisonous to inhale, she was pretty sure its lethality wasn't at such a high level unless the Robopelis added certain things to their so-called insecticide to make it much deadlier. Akosua described the chloramines in the fog being unlike anything she's ever smelled in her life, and she was someone who's had some truly vile things hit her senses. She and her bunker mates stayed underground for the rest of the day, through the night, and well into the next drizzly morning. By that time, Okosua had almost completely recovered from her exposure to the cloud, hoping the rain will wash it away and out to sea. She sat down, leaned on the wall, and didn't let her drying, steaming vomit cancel out the relief she felt from hearing the rainfall. Okosua implored her fallen family to absolve her of the sin of not being there for them when Burtherford had them executed at Burkrahe City's Civilization Square in front of a packed crowd of free settlers and detained natives. She relegated the events leading up to that very public demise to the back of her mind in fear of sinking to the floor of her own ocean of guilt. Okosua also chose not to dwell on how close she came to taking her own life when Haruna informed her of the executions and showed her its live broadcast. She called that the past, said the present was hers to control, and declared her future as being one for herself and her new families. After hours of hearing no human activity, Okosua was convinced that the Robopelese have moved on, leaving Yvonneport to sit in its devastation. That comforted her and her bunker mates into putting on gas masks before climbing out and stepping onto a rubber factory that had its roof mostly blown open, exposing it to the now sunshiny heavy rain. Even with the fog long gone, its scent lingered everywhere, nauseating Okosua and her comrades into wanting to dry heave. She and they fought off that urge with their want to reobtain Yvonneport and get reinforcements from Lunsal to their location as soon as possible, knowing that the Robopelese will be back for more. The rain was something for her to smile at, begging it not to stop and come down even harder to cleanse her city. Okosua led the charge through the city that searched for any signs of life, finding nothing but dead Adalunian troops every few feet or so. She and her comrades were sickened by the blood that sprayed out of the ears, eyes, noses, mouths, backsides, and frontsides of their acidically burnt fallen, trying but failing not to kneel in mourning. Okosua said the Robopelese won't get away with the creature they cowardly sicked on her Yvonneport. Adalina told her not to get her hopes up, because that revenge she wanted was as much of an impossibility as flying pigs or hell freezing over. Okosua froze as Robopelese troops surrounded her and her comrades like a crowd tightly encircling a school fight, quivering as though her fate had just been sealed. Adalina laughed at how feeble her father's killer looked now that she had her right where she wanted her and ate it up like a pie. Okosua expressed to her comrades how incredibly sorry she was for leading them to the predicament they're in now. Adalina said she was right to apologize and hoped she told her family that before they were rightfully hunted down and given the bullets of justice. But since she was in a good mood, she decided to not let Okosua's comrades suffer for a second longer, ordering Robopelese troops to massacre them all. Adalina smiled as the lethal sprays ended as quickly as they began and called that a present courtesy of her. Embracing herself as well as tasting and smelling lead and blood, Okosua shook as she looked back and saw all her comrades shot dead. Adalina told her that she's all alone and deservedly so, asking if she finally understood how hopeless things were for her. Okosua stared at her and shivered as she made no distinction between her and Adalino, calling them two of a kind that should have been thrown away in the garbage years ago. Adalina repeated that all she and the settlers wanted to do was bring Robopel and Nefuala out of the third world, wondering what about that was so immoral. She asked if this was the thanks Bromelians like her got for all the progress they've brought forth, saying that if it wasn't for her people, the archipelagos would still be in the Stone Age. Her want to vomit returning with a vengeance, Okosua remembered how that kind of talk was nothing new to her and the generations that preceded hers. She yelled that Bromelia had brought her people misery and nothing more, and said that in spite of her hatred of Alexis, she could relate to him in two respects. They both knew what being public enemy number one was like, and weren't there to see their loved ones die. Adalina screamed at her for having the effing nerve to sympathize with the Red Despot who mutilated Bromelia and left it for dead. Okosua was impressed that she did know how it felt to have her country be taken over and subjugated, finding it pitiful and repulsive that settlers like her cry, woe is they, over how Alexis treated them while subjecting the Robopelis and Nefualis to a lot of the same cruelties. Adalina yowled for her not to talk to her like she effing knows her, because she didn't then, doesn't know now, and never will. Her pained panting raised the ends of Okosua's lips slightly, but internally, her mind wept with joy over finally seeing an onion crack. Adalina realized that her weak side was leaking out, and seeing how blind her comrades' loyalties were to her didn't help at all. She angrily shot Okosua in her right knee, yowling for her to kneel like a good N-word who knew her place on the cotton field. Adalina said that with such venom that it even left her comrades speechless, but they were too afraid to express that shock, knowing they'll die like dogs if they speak out. Okosua gripped what was left of her right knee as blood soaked it in her hands, but that didn't stop her from discerning what was just said. She wasn't shocked that Adalina saw African natives in that light, but didn't think she'd actually say the quiet part out loud. That furthered what Okosua believed all along, that the Bromelian pillaging of Robopel and Nefuala was always about exploitation and never reformation. Adalina slipped out a repressed shriek that knew she really messed up this time, seeing the appall written all over her comrades' looks and breathing. Okosua said it appeared to her that the settlers weren't as loyal to the heiress as they were to the man whose throne she was to inherit. Chuckling at that statement, Adalina made it clear to her comrades that the Adalunians will kill them if they turn on her. She called Okosua out for trying to brand her as the racist when people like Haruna and Chizoba know nothing besides that word, calling it just that, and what she said merely talk. Adalina said the so-called Black Liberators have surely stayed true to their mission with all the ethnic cleansings they've perpetrated. Okosua called that despicably slanderous and demanded an apology for it, but instantly told the Robopelis to disregard her demand. Adalina said if she and her fellow settlers were guilty of crimes against humanity, then so were the quote-unquote liberators for their efforts to cleanse Robopel and Nephuala of their Bermelian minorities. She coughed out a laugh when Okosua vomited into her gas mask as pain and sickness took a toll that made her doubt whether her life could go on. That cough opened to an open mouth voice out when she saw a second Robopelese convoy approach Yevonport. Adelina wondered what point Okosua was trying to make out of her arrest, telling her to look around the roundabout thereat, as it will be where she'll die. She ordered a few of her comrades to get the camera out because she felt the time had arrived to end her pain. Seeing herself being filmed by menacing people, Okosua was reminded of how scared her family was, knowing that they had minutes to live. The film Haruna showed her left a scar on her soul that burned so deeply that its epidermal layer will never fully grow back. Adelina welcomed viewers to the demise of Okosua, saying that when the Adelunians obtain this footage, their little heroine will be long gone. She added that justice had been years overdue for Adelino and Courtenay, vowing to make her father's killer pay and ensure that the animal who killed mother will suffer an identical fate. Adelina wanted to get on with the killing fast enough for her second convoy to run upon the aftermath and not during it. She said that as viewers could see, she's already dealt a horrible blow to Okosua, hustling the camera person into focusing on the destroyed knee. Adelina explained how her film will differ from the one that showed Okosua's family being justly executed as the condemned and won't be quick. She revealed like a sword and pointed as such the cattle prod-like device Kiana used to burn a rebel's face off. Okosua cringed when she saw dried blood splatter on the prod, knowing that it had been used before with life-altering results. Adelina declared now as the time for the savage who murdered Adelino Sr. and Courtenay to feel every gram of her pain. She told Juma, Kahina, Kasembo, Lumusi, and Tadala that she hadn't forgotten about their roles in the murder, advising them not to sleep too deeply because she's coming for them as well. Adelina asked Okosua how she could dare murder her parents and orphan her, Adelino Jr., Kimmy, Kiana, and Ramira, but got no answer. About to begin the suffering, she was interrupted by a low roar that neared and multiplied with each passing second. Adelina looked up and was shocked to see numerous rockets coming right at her, making her scream for her troops to take cover as Yevonport suffered a clouding bombardment. Once the impacts ceased, the cloud dissipated to reveal a city in ruins with Adelunians and Robopelese corpses rotting together. Adelina woke up, wondered what hit her, got out of the high-rise she sheltered in and saw her comrades either dead or on the brink of it, breaking down as if her parents' deaths happened all over again. Not helping her was the rain's heaviness, but what did was the no longer existent smell of the deadly fog emboldening her into taking her suit off. Adelina got ready to shoot when she heard disorganized footsteps tapping away from her and was enraged to see Okosua running, limping, and crawling toward the volcano with purpose. She tried shooting at her, but her rifle jammed and broke like a bursting clock, peeving her into throwing it on the ground and giving chase. Adelina told Okosua that she didn't care how purposeful her run was because she's got the athleticism to bring her down. The second convoy touched Yevanport and its soldiers bolted out up the slopes and raided the city, intending to shoot the first Adalunian they see. Okosua got to the volcano, ran, limped, and crawled around it and fell when she reached its exact rear, looking up to see an Adalunian ship waiting, and happily cried when Juma stepped out of it. Adelina would get there shortly after and froze when she found herself alone against an enemy unit of several hundred. She rushed for Okosua as gunfire rapidly whizzed all around her, and even when a bullet hit her left ilium, that hit came too late, for she now had her father's killer as a human shield. Adelina could tell that her hostage's wound was really afflicting her, moving her in ways to allow as much rain to pour on it as possible. She begged Okosua to let out her agony, loud and definite, as it was soap to her dirtied up psyche with breaths frailed by desperation. Adelina laughed while having a difficult time breathing, sturdily staggering toward the unit in an attempt to tempt it into opening fire. Juma told those under him not to engage, knowing that while he had the chance to strip Robopel of their princess, it wasn't worth ending Okosua in the process. Adelina scoffed at how hesitant he was to shoot her and said he won't do it because they know that if this was her last stand, then she and her human shield will fall as two. Okosua's eyes widened and her mind yelled that over her dead body, will she let that fate come to pass, using what little strength she had left to break free. She drove a survivor knife through Adelina's sternum and partly halved her heart, surprising her into dropping her rifle as blood gushed out of her chest. Okosua used her might to keep her stab from being pulled out, wanting to make sure she doesn't get thrown past death's door too. Dark shadows filled up Adelina's sight as her arteries were being cut, upsetting her into thinking back on how her life was lived. Her conscience tried telling her to beg for God's forgiveness while she still could, but her heart locked away that voice to formulate parting words it knew will leave a lasting impression. Adelina wanted Okosua to know that she's won, even in death, for it'll unchain a rage that will win Bromelia and Robopel the war. Hearing the convoy near the volcano, Juma had his unit rush to give his severely injured comrade aid, imploring them to run faster than the wind, as they were no match for the coming enemy. Okosua shoved Adelina's body off of her when they fell together, shivering like a ghost had appeared as she was being taken into the Adalunian ship. Juma declared Yevanport lost and had his unit speed toward the island chain's interior, hoping that his friends were faring better wherever they were. Asked why her face was so white, Okosua thought she just awakened a beast and was so sorry for the wrath that they're all about to feel. Alexis was asleep after two whole nights of finishing his preparations for the invasion and had no plans to get up anytime soon. The island his base was on had yet to see or hear anything that resembled war, and he was intent on maintaining that untouchedness. Alexis dreamt about his days of ruling Bromelia with a smile that slowly fell to a frown that made him wake up to his aging self. His cherubic looks had been gone for years, and what that fadeaway left behind was a man whose world got smaller by the day. In his journal, and dated February 13, 1976, Alexis wrote that Grimsby and Fyodor were wrong to think they had him all figured out because he's got traps waiting for their peons. The events in Yvonport happened at the same time other parts of the Odaloon Islands were finding themselves under attack. Drinking green tea in Robopel's presidential villa in Rokrada, Fyodora thought of how she split up Adalina, Kimmy, and Ramira out of a belief that putting them together risked a crippling tragedy. She knew Kiana was in Burkrahe City and that Adalino Jr. and Brett Jr. were in Cressistreia, but had no idea how they'll contribute to the war effort. Fyodora had the most concern for those three because of the Adalunian invasion, leaving the mentioned places susceptible to surprise attacks, the reason for her recent sleeping troubles. Although she and Grimsby wanted to seize control of Lunsal, they saw towns such as Yvonport, Zackville, Julston, and Felicisla as being great to have. Fyodora walked out to her villa's balcony, sipped her tea, and let the jungle soothe her with its wet tunes. A staffer cut into her moment by telling her that news had come out of Yvonport and warned her that she won't like it. Fyodora finished her tea in one gulp, left her villa, and rushed into the Robopelis capital in West Rufuchikan, where her vice ruler regretted to inform her that Adalina had been killed in action. That plunged her into a pit of sadness that had no floor for her mind to splat onto, calling herself out for being so careless. Fyodora gave into Adalina's assertion that she'd take part in the attack on Yvonport after begging her to reconsider and be with Kiana instead. She didn't know how the Robopelis would react to their princess's death, but knew that it will take her people's anger to a level not beheld since her predecessor's demise. Fyodora was also worried that her grip on power will be in jeopardy now that she broke her promise that Adalina would return alive and as a war heroine. She needed to think of a way to make what happened not her fault without putting her people's support for the war at risk, writing a speech she hoped will patch up her failure. Fyodora and Grimsby were unaware that their joint effort was about to directly affect them, Robopel and Bromelia, and Nephuala too. And as fate would have it, the Adaloon Islands War would have more than a few devastating surprises in store for all involved. And that was Yvonport. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the story I just gave. Share this show with everyone you know. Make sure they share it with everyone they know. Check out my website at www.rss.com/podcasts/The Dystopian Republic. Send me your respectful questions and constructive feedback at RaulGuerreroJr95@gmail.com. On that note, I'm Raul Guerrero, and come again for another gripping, thoughtful, and sinister episode of The Dystopian Republic.